everyone, and welcome to another episode of Wisdom Chat. And today I have my wonderful guest, Rachel Surtees, with me. Good morning, Rachel.
Good morning, Phil.
We're going to be talking about a change that we're going to do next year with regards to the Wisdom Chat podcast. And invited Rachel to come and join me today just to partly to introduce herself, but also for us to share together what we're proposing. So, Rachel, before we go any further, just introduce yourself. And you were my first guest on Wisdom Chat, weren't you? It was the end of December, wasn't it? So it's literally virtually a year ago.
Yeah, it is indeed a year ago. We talked about preparing yourself for Christmas and how to look after yourself financially and well-being wise over Christmas. Being excited about the podcast then, actually. So to be invited to collaborate a bit more is fantastic. Thank you for inviting me.
It's a pleasure, Rachel. And I know we've sort of maintained our sort of contact with each other. And one of the things that really struck me was it would be really good to collaborate with somebody and do something slightly different. So before we go any further, though, Rachel, just tell our listeners a little bit about yourself.
So I am Rachel Surtees, and my business name is The Rambling Psychotherapist. So I am a relational integrative psychotherapist, and I do the majority of my work in the outdoors. So I work one-to-one with people in therapy in the outdoors, but I also offer online therapy as well as an alternative for people. I've got a particular interest in leadership development and relational leadership development at that, because I believe that if people can be supported to have really healthy relationships and to understand the dynamics of relationships, they can be absolutely fantastic leaders. But that the current provision tends to fall down a little bit as far as support is concerned of leaders at the moment. So, yeah, that's what I do for a business. And I remember first meeting you networking, Phil, and recognising that our paths crossed over a little bit, actually, because I remember you saying, oh, I do financial wellbeing. And I thought, oh, I wonder what that is. And we met for a one-to-one and we talked for hours about the kind of the psychology behind money, about stories, about how people work emotionally rather than from a cognitive analytical perspective, et cetera, et cetera. So like I say, it's just exciting to be invited to collaborate a little more.
Well, it's my pleasure. I actually wondered what you were going to say just then when you said when we first met. I do remember that as well. And I must admit, I too felt quite excited because in some circles, it's not an easy subject. When you talk A, psychology, and B, when you're linking that to things like finances, one of the least talked about subjects that... For whatever reason, in our culture, we find it very hard to talk about money, like mental health, certainly on a personal level anyway. But
yet, what I've found as I've gone along is that if you can find comfortable ways of introducing the subjects, people are absolutely fascinated by this stuff as well, and they really want to engage with it. I find that with many of the taboo subjects in life, actually, that you can find a way that's comfortable for people to be introduced to it, that actually people are hungry for this stuff.
Yeah, it's interesting. You are right, because even in the latter few months, there's been a growing interest in the whole sort of money psychology side. Mm-hmm. And where you alluded to stories a moment ago, and the thing that I found that's worked with regards to engaging somebody in a conversation is telling stories. And very often people, when they listen to the stories, they can identify with certain aspects of, you know, whoever was involved in that particular story. And so it does make it a little bit easier for them to open up somewhat.
Humans are sense-making beings. Actually, the thing that fuels us is stories. We have experiences and then we create stories to explain what happened. around them. So, if you can come at things from a narrative perspective, a story perspective, it makes it much more accessible for people rather than facts and figures. People tend to turn off around facts and figures, in my experience.
I think you're very right on that. And I'm just thinking, rather than keeping our listeners sort of on tenterhooks in terms of what is this news that we're going to announce, I think we ought to just go ahead and announce it, because I think this is the exciting part. And even when we're talking about sort of stories, it's interesting when you've got a number of people involved in a story, how it sort of makes it come alive. And
absolutely, and makes it richer, doesn't it?
Yeah. So shall I go ahead and announce it?
Please right. do.
So to all our listeners, wherever you may be and in whatever circumstance you may find yourselves in, Rachel and I have agreed that we're going to collaborate together on what we're going to call Wisdom Chat Plus podcasts. And the difference here is not just that we're collaborating, which will be excellent, but also at the same time, we're going to be inviting a number of guests to join us for different topics. So, Rachel, do you want to say anything about some of the topics we've talked about?
Yeah, so some of the things that certainly in the coming months that I'd like to cover, I'd like to look at digital wellbeing. Partly from a perspective of we are becoming an increasingly digital race, I guess. Everything that we do seems to be digitally based these days. So I want to look at the pros and cons of that a little bit and how you look after yourself in an increasingly digital environment, but also looking a little bit at the digital offerings as far as wellbeing are concerned as well, and looking at how they can support you from a health and wellbeing perspective. I'd also like to look a little bit about how organisations, large and small, can support their employees from a wellbeing perspective and how to do that well. Some organisations do it really well, and others don't. And there are some challenges that organisations face to putting an adequate provision out there for their employees rather than just engaging in tick box exercises. So I'd like to look at all the kind of facets that surround that a little as well.
I think that one will be particularly good. All of them will be good, but that one in particular, because what I've come across is those companies who yet are not fully engaging with the employee wellbeing arena, often it's either because they don't really know where to start, or they've been told, oh, you only need XYZ. So, for example, in the world of finances, it might be you just need to be able to provide certain employee benefits. So it might be a salary-linked savings scheme or a salary-linked loan. And obviously in time we'll say more about those, but so it's that, it's this misconception of we can have cycle to work or car share or gym memberships and certain other employee benefits that or provide somebody at the end of a phone to talk to and yet wonder why people are not using the service.
Absolutely. And I think one of the other things that certainly like SMEs often face is they've become a little bit outfaced about how to do it well. They struggle from a cost perspective. Well, actually, I think large organisations struggle from a cost perspective as well. So the more employees you have, the more cost is involved in putting together a really good employee wellbeing programme. And therefore, they struggle because of the large scale of employees. But also the smaller end of the spectrum, they struggle from a cost perspective as well about how to put together a really adequate provision. And they can often do with a little bit of support about what actually constitutes adequate provision and what would be adequately supportive of employees. Like I say, rather than something that looks good on the surface, something to actually be supportive of employees. And there are plenty of organisations out there that can support with that.
And I think to be able to give reassurance to organisations and companies, large, medium and small, that there are good organisations out there that can actually help and guide them through the process, make it as painless as possible, but also at the same time help those organisations recover any costs. Because one of the things I've noticed, having been involved in training and development for many, many years, is the first areas that tend to get hit when there's a squeeze on costs tends to be training and marketing. That those two areas tend to get hit first. So it's people being able to see that this is an investment, not a cost. Yes, it costs, but you're investing, and the part about it is the return is far greater often than the cost itself.
Absolutely. I mean, basically, well employees means a well organisation, doesn't it? Like, ultimately, organisations run on people. So if your people are happy and well and invested in your organisation, you're going to see the returns financially.
Yeah, definitely.
I think organisations get a little... or can get a little scared about the costs involved. So these organisations out there that support people to provide employee wellbeing and do it well are often looking at it from the most cost-effective way of doing it as well.
Just thinking again as well about the subject matters, because there was a couple that I thought of in our sort of conversations. One of those is, and it's linked to the digital wellbeing that you talked about earlier, and it's to do with financial technology and how that is rapidly developing in lots of different fields. So from a consumer point of view, what are the resources available to us out there that enable us to manage our money well and make life a lot easier in managing money? You know, the finance industry are very good at making things complex. They're not the only industry, but we for some reason, we like to make things quite sort of technically and complex, where in actual fact, aspects of our finance should be simplified, not made more complex, and how some of these apps actually do that for us.
I was going to say, actually, if you think about the barriers that people face to an ever-increasing digital world, the more complex something is, the more likely somebody is to avoid using it. So I think simplifying things can be really beneficial, and I understand that there need to be certain complications in place in order to make it safe.
There is that, and to be honest, many of the good apps out there actually comply with the same level of security that the banking industry employs, and it comes under what's called open banking. We'll say more about this later on, but it's regulation set up by government, and so there's been a lot of work to protect people's identities and protect people's money and so on. There was one other thing I was thinking, and that was to do with mind.
Financial abuse, wasn't it?
There's that subject, in terms of financial abuse. That's a slightly different field to what we're referring to in terms of the technology, but the financial abuse side, it's more common. I was shocked, to be honest, and how common it is, and harrowing to hear some of the stories. So when I've listened to some of the stories of people's experiences, even just recently I was talking to somebody and they shared a story, in a relationship, so, you know, husband and wife, and how that transpired, the financial abuse that caused, in this case, the wife to feel completely and utterly violated in many respects, to the point where her ability to trust others is severely affected. And
she's been traumatised, hasn't she?
She has. She has very much so.
It's compromised her ability to relate to people.
Yeah. And be able to trust them. So now she's in a new relationship, married, and the husband completely understands where she's at. However, he wants to be able to help and support. He wants to contribute. And at the moment, there are barriers there. And so it's really looking at how can we help her reduce those barriers, but still feel safe and things are dealt with appropriately. So that's an area I'd really like to cover. And as I was saying to you earlier, touched on this with the illegal money lending team, had a couple of people from there that, were involved with Wisdom Chat. And when you listen to their stories, the stories of people who have succumbed to a moneylender, and I think there was a story on the news recently as well about one where this lady had ended up paying something like £26,000 for about £2,500 loan.
Crikey. Wow.
Not all in one go, but
yeah.
And how that was extracted from her, the fear, the threats, and so on. So I think that's quite a sort of key area. But I remember what I was thinking about earlier was it was a story to do with it's to do with the well-being side. I think the story eludes me now, but it was to do with the importance of helping individuals feel that what's talked about is confidential, it's safe and it's secure.
Mm.
Sometimes when we don't communicate that message to people, there is assumption, like, for example, we've provided an employee assistance program. And in that, there is a telephone number you can phone somebody to talk with and receive help and support from. Yes. And yet people have not used it. And it's about how we communicate things and communicate the message and recognize the importance of keeping people safe. So, for example,
it's actually really important. It's something I come across in my work. So as a psychotherapist, I assume that everybody knows that our work will be confidential, that obviously anything that's said to me will not be spoken about outside of the room other than in clinical supervision, which is with another person who has to hold the confidentiality boundaries. And yet the amount of people that will get to a point where they're about to say something sensitive and say to me, "You won't speak to anybody else about this, will you?" So it's something that I've learned over time. I have to make really clear with people in advance of starting to work with them that our sessions are confidential so that they're comfortable enough. And like I say, I'd sort of assumed people would know that. People would understand that.
Yeah. But
to make it clear, I think, is really important.
Vitally. And I've learned, if there's one thing, never assume anything. What's that saying? It makes an ass out of you and me.
It does, but
it's true. The fact that we've assumed that people think it's confidential and they're okay, and yet people are not responding. Actually, they're perhaps feeling it's not confidential or they don't understand the situation. Mm-hmm. It's interesting. There was a survey done, quite an extensive one. And one of the questions in the survey was asking the employer, would your employees, if they needed to talk to somebody, talk to their line manager? And 13% of the employers said yes, they would. Okay. The same question was asked of the employees, and only 5% of the employees said yes, they would.
Wow.
And so that, even though there's still quite relatively small numbers, we are actually identifying there a miscommunication or a misalignment of understandings of how people might respond or not respond. And I think things like, will this affect my career? Will it affect my, job prospects? Will it affect the way that people treat me? And you know. Yeah. So all these fears come to the surface.
So and there's a level of emotional security, emotional safety needed, and yeah, that's becoming created, doesn't it? Yeah.
Yeah. And, you know, so I think that's a key area to address. And that's one of the things I think, you know, in all of this, getting across to people is in this world of well-being, confidentiality is vital and that it's clearly communicated to people. So
I'm excited to be digging into some of these subjects.
Yeah, I know. This is what I would say to our listeners, and that is clearly we've got some subjects already that we'd like to cover based on what we've come across, what we've seen, what we've experienced. But also at the same time, we'd like to hear from you. Any subject areas that you think, actually, I'd really like to know more about this, please get in touch with us. You can get in touch through my website. That's www.aurumgoldltd.co.uk, or through Rachel's website. Rachel, your website address
is www.ramblingpsychotherapist.co.uk.
Brilliant. And so, and many of these podcasts, well, they go out on social media. So if there are any subject areas that you think would be really useful to be covered, then please do get in touch with either Rachel or myself, Phil Holdsworth. And we would look at these and we would be very happy to cover other subject areas.
What's more important than happy, to us? I love investigating new areas.
Yeah, and I think what's important to us is the fact that we're covering things that mean something to other people. Mm-hmm. You know, there are important subjects that people feel this is something that's pressing us at the moment. So there might be even things that as the year goes on next year that we feel, actually, I think this is a subject area we need to cover, but there may be areas that we've not considered and our listeners may well help us out on this, so that'd be really good. But I'm really excited to work with you, Rachel, and
likewise, Phil.
And I think we'll end up with some very good Wisdom Chat Plus podcasts. We've got some guests already lined up for January, so our first podcast will go out on the 9th of January. And we'll put that across social media. But in the meantime, we'll be looking for some very interesting people to chat with around these subject areas.
Definitely. So if anybody's interested in speaking as well, please do get in touch with us too.
Yeah, that's wonderful. Well, Rachel, thank you so much. Lovely to invite you on board. And I'm looking forward to us collaborating together next year.
Thank you, Phil. Thanks so much. Likewise, I'm looking forward to it too.
Okay, you take care.
Take care.